then you go out to a library or a bookstore and get 10 books on golf and outline a product based on the ideas you got from those books. I remember one book I really liked, had a simple title, said The Secrets of Perfect Putting. But anyway, you outline your book. Then you write a direct mail letter as though your product actually existed. Then you mail 1,000 letters out of that. You have to rent 5,000, but I often rent 5,000 and test only 1,000. And if you get enough money back that the arithmetic says that you made a profit doing this and you did it with your own money, then you are entitled to call yourself a copywriter. If you can't do that, you are defrauding people when you hold out your shingle as a copywriter who knows what he's doing and can work for other people. Because just think about this. Everything was under your control, from the selection of the list to the creation of the product to the sales letter to the price, everything. And if you can't do it when everything is under your control, how are you going to do it when a client dictates to you what you have to say? So that is the real acid test of whether you are a copywriter or not. Okay? Now, I'm going to do something that I really find offensive, and that is I'm going to answer these questions. This first question asked all three of those, and so I answered all three of those in there and says, okay, now here's the next question that I have in my hand. Is there an update on the old ADA formula? ADA, for any of you that might not know, stands for Attention, Interest, Desire, Action. And if so, what is it? The answer is, no, there is no update that I know out of that. I don't know of a better formula than that. There probably are a few other things. I mean, I think you could put proof in there or something, but the answer is no. There is not an update on that formula. Okay. Now, this guy, I'm not going to mention his name because he offends me. And I want to tell you what he reads, what he says. You are asking me to give you time out of my life. Why? When I or any other person is dying, we cannot recall to get back the hours of our life. You have not shown why anyone should listen in and give up any time out of their life to another online marketer's call. Are you going to pay them for the call? The current trend of online calls is not showing any value at all. And yes, they are sometimes recorded and offered or sold subsequent to the calls. Big deal. In fact, the time I've spent typing this email may be just another waste of my time. The payback is you have to read it. Well, you know, I think this guy is frankly despicable. Here we are offering something completely free and offering something of valuable, and he's still bitching. And I want to tell you something, and I want all you people out there to listening to this. I can tell who is a great marketer when I visit them in their home. You know what I do? As soon as we get comfortable, I ask them if I could see their library. And I was talking to Michael Fortin the other day, and he was telling me, you know, he spent $500,000 for his direct marketing education. And, you know, I spent probably more than that. I would buy books when I couldn't afford to pay the electricity, or they were turning off my water. And whenever you hear somebody whining about buying information, just get them out of your life. Because if they're whining because, oh, I had to buy something, it's free. You know what? you should buy something. If you pay $500 and get two good ideas out of it, you've got your money's worth. And stop being such a pussy and such a crybaby and stop whining. You know, if you want to get this done and you want to do it, you got to pay the price, and that's all there is to it. I was talking to Mike. Mike, how much have, I'll ask you, for how much have you spent for your direct marketing education?
Oh, it's $500,000.
How long has it taken you to get as good as you are?
25 years.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of people on this call who want to get it for $2.50 and get it in 3 hours. Guess what? You people all suck. Okay. Now, and I'm going to answer his questions anyway. Is there a huge difference in mail order versus direct mail, assuming you use a targeted audience? I don't even know what that question means. But all I know is that if you mail order, I guess if he means newspaper or advertising or magazine advertising, newspaper advertising is difficult because there's so much waste circulation because such a small fraction will be in the market for any such other thing. Magazines can be very targeted. And direct mail is very targeted. No, there is no difference, at least no difference in copy. Now, here's another question. How is this for a headline to an ad looking for people who are fed up with their job? Are you suffering from job dissatisfaction? Actually, that is a headline that sucks. And I'll tell you why it sucks. Because it's cute. Because it's tricky. You know, this guy is really proud that he's come up with job dissatisfaction. And, okay, now here's another question. Now we're starting to go into other people's questions, so I'm gonna be kinder and gentler here.
Wow, what a surprise.
Everybody will hang up as soon as I do. At one of our entrepreneur boot camps, I had you speak at many moons ago. You had everyone get out a couple of blank pages, and you dictated a sample letter, complete with lots of blah, blah, blahs. For some reason, I don't have that in my files anymore, and it might be a good thing to do on your live seminar. And that's from Mark Stoddard, an old and dear friend of mine. Mark, if you're listening, I think what you're talking about is the dollar bill letter. And if all else fails, write a dollar bill letter. And here's the copy again. Dear friend, as you can see, I have attached a nice, crisp $1 bill to the top of this letter. Why have I done this? Actually, there are two reasons. One, I needed some way to make sure this letter would catch your attention. Two, and secondly, and since what I'm writing to you about can help you make a lot of money or help you save a lot of money, I thought using a dollar bill as an eye catcher was a good idea. Anyway, here's what it's all about. And then we go into the blah, blah, blahs of what it's all about. Now, the rest of the formula for that is after you send that dollar bill, you wait a few days until they've had time to get it, and then you call them and you say, "Hi, this is Mark Stoddard. I sent you a piece of mail, and I'm not sure. I just wanted to make sure you got it. You'll remember it if you did, because there was a dollar bill attached to the front page of the letter. And at that point, something very important is going to happen. You are going to get your first yes nod. You won't be able to see it on the phone, of course, but somebody will say, "Yeah, I got that. I got the dollar." And then you're going to say, "Well, I wanted to check because, you know, you can't be too careful when you're sending money in the mail. Isn't that right?" And he's going to go, "Yeah, you couldn't be too careful." And then you're going to say, "Well, you did get the letter. The dollar was intact and you've had a chance to read it." And then you'll get your third yes nod. And if you can't take it from there, you should get out of marketing. You know? So first of all, I want to say, Mark, it was glad to hear from you again. And But I think that's the answer to your question. By the way, Mark reminded me of a quote of mine, which is one of my favorite quotes, especially since it's mine. Nothing is impossible for a person who refuses to listen to reason. Okay. This is Gary, looking forward to the call tonight. Question. We are doing a split gate, I don't know what that is, with a radio station. They run spots, and we show up and do training and split the total revenue. I guess that's what it is. We're shooting for 500 people at $59 each. Not sure how to make the spot stand out in the glut of other average commercials. It's talk radio. They volunteered to create the spots, but I know radio stations are awful at the creative, and I thought you could add some spice to it. Could you address this tonight? Yes, I will. The best thing you can do to make your spot stand out is avoid all bells and whistles, all music, all trickery, and everything, and it just should be a voice, probably a male voice, talking, explaining what it is all about. And the main thing is you don't want to detract from your message, and the trickery and the music and all that stuff detracts. If you're not going to use a something that's equally as good as a male voice is a female voice from the South, a Southern accent. Now I'm going to tell you all a secret that almost nobody knows, and it's this. If you run a full-page ad in a newspaper, you should budget, at least some of the time, $3 per thousand. Like if the circulation of the newspaper is 100,000, then allow $3 for each thousand, so $300. And on the day that the newspaper comes out, you should pay $300, these are rough figures, not exact, to a radio station. And by the way, when you buy stuff on a, when you buy radio commercials, there's only two stations, kind of stations you want. Country music and talk radio. And the reason for that is that's the only radio that people are actually listening to. All the rest of, they might be bouncing along to the music, but they're paying attention to this. And what you should do with that is you should advertise your advertising. Say, are you interested in losing weight? If so, read the Miami Herald today. Look for the page that says, NASA scientist invents new way to lose weight. Now, by the way, you can do that on television, and if you're buying a 10-second spot on TV, which is about all you can afford to buy these days, when the day your newspaper comes out, you should say, somebody should be standing there with the ad in front of the camera showing them the ad and say, are you interested in lose weight? Look for this page in today's Miami Herald. A NASA scientist reveals a new way to lose weight. That's called advertising the advertising. And while I'm on that, I'll tell you another trick. Newspapers are so huge today that that I have ran ads that came out in newspapers where to find my own ad, I personally had to go through it seven times looking for my own ad. And as a general rule, if you're running in newspapers, if you can manage it, always run on a Tuesday because you want to run in the skinniest paper there is. Now, here's a big trick when you're running in fat papers. Advertise the advertising with little one-inch ads in other sections of the paper. And you say, want to know a new way to lose weight invented by a rocket scientist? See page 74 in the C section. And sprinkle those ads throughout the newspaper that will get people to go to a section that they wouldn't have gone to normally. Okay? Let's see what else we got here. One, do you, Gary Halbert, know when to write short copy and when to write long copy? Are there objective criteria for making the determination? Anything you can describe, any source material to read or listen to, or is it all a matter of guts, and experiment? You know, what you really should do, and all of you are suffering from this, is I suspect that most of these people here don't know what a world-class swipe file is. I would guess that you, Michael Fortin, have thousands of examples in your swipe file, as I do.
Oh, yeah.
And you should look at small ads, and you should look at long ads, and you should be writing them out in your own handwriting till it's embedded in your on you on a neural basis. Second question, what do you do to make sure you write good copy about something you consider disgusting? For example, I hate gangsta rap. But if a guy wants me to sell his gangsta rap training course, how can I, A, quickly get up to speed on the subject, and B, get in a frame of mind that lets me write copy so good that I might even change my own feeling about the subject? First, I think you should avoid, unless the wolf is at your door, writing about things that disgust you. It's hard enough to make all of this work by writing things that you're passionate about. But if you have to write about gangsta rap, which I hate too, then what you want to do is you want to read hip-hop magazines, you want to talk to the people who play it, you want to talk to the people who listen to it. What the biggest thing that people fail to do, I saw a great picture on the internet the other day that somebody had been able to capture a complete picture of an iceberg, the part above and below the water. The conditions were just right. But David Ogilvy was asked one time, what was his long suit in advertising? And he said, it's research. And I'll tell you something. Everybody that's good at advertising, that's their long suit, research. And you just got to do the research, and that's all there is to it. Three, is there a quick way to find the starving crowd you often talk about with a customer who doesn't yet have customers of his own? Well, first of all, if you can, you should avoid working for people who don't have customers of their own. But I don't know how, you know, this question indicates that you and your client are going for it backwards. In other words, a product or service has been created and you're going out to find the market. That's absolutely backwards. What you want to do is find the market and then create a product or service to service that market. Okay, next question. Gary, I plan to join your live seminar today. I have recently designed and patented a unique golf tee called the Stack Tee. Favorable articles have been written about the new Stack Tee in three trade journals, he names them, and it was recently approved by the USGA. A number of golfers have tried the Stack Tee and really like it. Briefly, the primary features and functionality of the Stack Tee are, one, the capability to stack multiple tees together, which make it easy to adjust the height of a golf ball for any kind of tee shot. Two, it interlocks, making it easy to carry a stock of tees in your shirt or pocket. Three, it is made out of a polymer material with a lower surface hardness than did the hard birchwood tees, and it will not damage, scratch, or leave paint marks on expensive thin-face drivers. Four, it's designed to minimize the kinetic energy loss from a club tee interaction. Weight is only a third of the standard wood tee. Five, it functions as a standard tee holder and can be used to adjust the height of wood tees. Five, it is golf course friendly, made from a biodegradable polymer material that can easily cut or vacuum by lawnmower. I am not a marketing guru, but what some people consider a technical geek, PhD engineering. By the way, for you who don't know, PhD stands for piled higher and deeper. But I try to keep my head out of the clouds, and I have common sense. I plan to send out a letter flyer discovering features, functionality, and samples of the Stack T to all of the U.S. dealer distributors of golf equipment and the golf courses. According to my research, approximately 500 million golf tees are consumed annually. My question to you, for you, is what is the best way to market this new product? Am I barking up the wrong tree? Thanks for the invitation. I look forward to your feedback. This guy has really put some effort into trying. So the first thing I'm going to say, although it sounds discouraging, I'm going to follow up with something not so discouraging. This doesn't have any sex appeal or sales appeal for golfers whatsoever. John Carlton is the master at marketing to golfers, and here's what they want. They want to hit longer, straighter drives off the tee, tee shots. That is the number one appeal. This is a very weak appeal. But having said that, I think if you find people who distribute products to places that sell golf equipment, that this is going to be an excellent adjunct to the line that they carry, and that you should maybe put that in their line. But you're never, I shouldn't say never, because who am I to say? I said when I saw Star Wars, the movie, that it would fail, but you're not going to sell that at a profit via direct marketing. But I think you maybe can sell it as a distributorship, and I wish you the best of luck on it. Okay, here's another question. I'd like to hear your insights on the differences in writing fascinations. By the way, fascinations is a word that some people use for bullets. For an information product, such as a book, report, or newsletter, versus a physical product, such as a vitamin, gadget, etc., the answer is there is no difference whatsoever. For the information product, it's much more direct that some unique knowledge will be revealed versus the physical product, which has specific benefits, but they're not teased the same way. I'd also like to hear your thoughts in the difference in creating maglogs versus other types of direct mail. First of all, he is on the wrong track in thinking that the creation of bullets differ from how you should go about it differently from a physical product than you should an information product. That is not true. And the best way to learn how to write bullets is go to the Gary Halbert newsletter. It's, you all know it. It's www.thegaryhalbertletter.com. Click on View Newsletter Archives and find the envelope that says Let's Do the Twist, and you will get a free education on how to write bullets. Now, he also says, I also like to hear your thoughts on the difference in creating maglogs versus other types of direct mail. And here's what I'd like to say about this. If at all possible, avoid creating maglogs. They are used by the biggest mailers in the world. I'm working for one of them now. And some of the source material is the maglogs they use. And so much work goes into creating a maglog, and so much expertise in not only the writing and also the layout, which you just about have to have a layout artist do it, that really and truly all the great writers I know, me, Scott Haynes, I don't know about you, Mike, I don't know if you do that, John Carlton and everything, if somebody has a magalog job and they insist on it being a magalog, we turn the job down. And I'll tell you the truth. A tear sheet mailing or a hard-hitting direct mail letter will beat the magalog every day. But magalogs are way too much work to be worth the effort. Okay. Hi, Gary. What is the best time frame to follow up on prospects by phone after sending them phone postcards? Okay, number one, really, folks, don't send them postcards. it's just a little bit cheaper than sending them a killer, hard-hitting sales letter. And I want you all to get something straight in your head. It's not how cheaply you can do it. It's how much of a return you can get on your investment. I would bet you that this person mailing postcards to get leads, I'll bet you that she would make more money if she would send FedEx letters and follow them up. Now, actually, but her specific question is about the time frame. Who knows when a postcard is going to get there? I'd wait about 5 days, I guess, if I were sending postcards because someone had a gun to my head. But it's much more predictable if you send a Federal Express package. It's much more impactful, and it's going to be much more profitable if it's well written. And if you send a first class letter, you're going to make a lot more money too. You know, I mean, I don't even know what a postcard costs because I never send them. Do you know how much they cost, Mike?
No, I don't.
Yeah, I don't think very many really top marketers would even know what they cost. But everybody wants to do this because it's cheap. You should stop thinking about cheap and stop thinking about return on investment. I remember in the early days of the internet, guys crowing that they were able to make a telephone call for free on the internet. It took him 18 hours to do it. Well, if you think 18 hours is free, then you don't have the right mindset to even be in any kind of business. Another example of that is I went to the Rolling Stones Steel Wheels concert, and I took a bunch of people with me, and I paid about $300 for each of the tickets. And we sat in the second row center. I mean, I could reach out and touch Mick Jagger. The people in front of me were bragging how they had got their tickets for $35, but they had also had to camp out for a day and a half. Well, I guess I was the fool because I thought my time was worth more than $3 or $4 an hour of laying in a sleeping bag in the rain. So, and that leads me to an extraneous comment. There's a lot of people, a lot of ways to beat people at direct marketing competition that are not thought of. One way is to outwork them. Another very easy way is to outspend them. There's a lot of time you'll find a real cheap skate person with a scarcity mentality that will be moving so slow. He'll be, you know, the biggest difference between winners and losers? Losers focus on the perils of defeat. Winners focus on the rewards of winning. So if you focus on, gee, what could go wrong here and all of that, probably something is going to go wrong. Okay, here's another one.
I just want to add one little thing, Gary.
No. This is my call. I don't want anybody interrupting me. You know, they're out there peeping. Halbert is, what a creep, you know. You realize how many people you have in this call with no sense of humor whatsoever? These people should be working at McDonald's and be being made to eat dog food. Go ahead, Mike.
I should recite the first response you ever given me after I've written to you. But I just
maybe
to add,
not.
No. I just wanted to add that the only exception I have found, and the reason why I know this is because I've actually written copy for Michael Kimball. And Michael is the a big shot in the postcard industry, and the only postcards that I've ever worked with that have worked really well are oversized wall to wall dense copy size postcards.
Yeah, they might work.
And with an offer and an actual call to action and a response device attached to it, but not the teeny weeny postcards. I'm talking about an oversized, either letter or even legal size postcard, and there's a dense copy. It's like a whole sales letter on one postcard or both sides.
It's worth a try. Anything's worth a test, you know? And that sounds like if it could be made to work, you got it. Here's one. I have an opportunity to do direct mail with another company, sharing all expenses. Our customer demographics mirror each other, same age, income, sex, education, occupation, etc. comprise the same material niche identical. Different products, one product, hearing aids, cost between $2,000 and $8,000 with a huge markup, while the other, bone density testing, cost only $59.95 with a $30 markup. Two letters will be sent within the same envelope. Questions. How effective